Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX, a few minutes past 2 p.m. Election day, primary day, been building to this for a long time. Lots of political ads and lots of interviews. We have Senator Bill Eigel, who is running for governor of Missouri, joining the show. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me. Happy primary day.
Yeah, happy primary day to you. So everyone, get out there, whether you're voting for Bill, you're voting for someone else, get out there, do your civic duty, and vote. So, Bill, it is fourth quarter, bottom of the ninth. Shoot your shot. Tell people why they should be going out there and voting for you.
Well, we've got the platform that I think Republicans are looking for. If you want a governor that's going to do four things. Number one, we're going to detain and deport every single one of the illegal immigrants in this state and join with Donald J. Trump, who I happen to think is going to be the next president of the United States, in restoring the sovereignty of our state and our nation. Two, I am the only candidate in this race that is proposing getting rid of personal property tax. We've got plenty of your money in Jefferson City. We've got too much of your money in government. We're going to cut the tax burden. We're going to start with personal property tax, and we're going to hit income taxes and get rid of both of those taxes into the Missouri I'm talking about. Three, we're going to stop selling our farmland to China or any other foreign country. I'm the only candidate in this race that has made a commitment. We're going to stop the sale of farmland to any foreign country. And like Sarah Huckabee Sanders down in Arkansas is doing, we're going to get back every single square inch of ground that we've lost. And finally, we're going to protect our families and our children of some of this nonsense, of this craziness that's gotten into our libraries, that's gotten into our schools. I'm talking about the DEI, CRT, transgender ideological nonsense that's being pushed in front of our kids. We're going to get that out of there. We're going to protect our children. We're going to make Missouri a leader and the envy of every one of the other 50 states. And we have all the momentum as the polls, and we start to head towards the hour where the polls are going to close. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, Dave. Get out there and vote. Exercise that civic duty. Let's go, Missouri.
Bill, you've been a gentleman and a friend of the show, and we wish you luck and continued success either way it goes. Thank you, my friend.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Can't believe it's here.
I know.
It must be a crazy day for these guys, too.
Oh, yeah. That's
for like
that's
all
why
of
I didn't
the want
to keep him real long. He's got a million things to do. No, really. He's got polls to go to.
Hands to shake.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, how much time? I mean, what do you think? A year at least?
Oh.
Actively doing things. Not to mention all the time in the lead up, you know, building support, building up your war chest, all that stuff.
I have to say, I got tired of the ads like everyone, because you can only watch, I don't care whether it's ads for pickles, eventually you get tired of pickles. But I thought it was a pretty well-run campaign all the way around. Like there wasn't as much on the Democrat side, I guess. Maybe I didn't notice it as much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Kehoe, Ashcroft, and Eigel, they went after each other, but they didn't get real nasty. So do you guys agree, disagree?
Yeah, I didn't see them say that much mean stuff about each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. They turned Jay Ashcroft into a fish.
They turned him into a fish.
I mean, that's not like the meanest thing you can do, but like they turned were going for it for sure. I'm not sure exactly who paid for that ad, but I was like, oh, that's an interesting one. I've never seen one like that before.
He do be looking like a fish, though.
Oh, man.
Is it bad, though, that like in the way that politics has gotten lately, I'm like, oh, well, the fish is fine.
Well, no, you're
right. That's not so bad.
The standard is so low. It's like, oh, you were decent to me. Oh, you didn't call me a name. Yeah. Thank you so much. You're such a good person.
That's what I was saying with like the Tim Walz thing. I am really interested in the difference between, I guess you have to say this. We almost have to stop saying MAGA Republicans, because MAGA is Republican. Republican is MAGA. That's the way it is. Maybe someday it'll go back to something resembling Reagan Republicanism or Mitt Romney or something like that. But I'm very interested, and I would like to hear intellectual discussions about, okay, Harris and Walz, why are you better for America? Why are you better for the middle class? I'm gettable. I'm gettable by either side. I really, truly am. I'm a fairly high wage earning W-2 non-rich guy. I don't mind giving up some of my tax dollars more than I maybe would like to pay if it goes to good things. You know, like you're talking about Wheels, that Walz gets criticized because he passed something guaranteeing school lunches and things like that. Take my money. take my money for guaranteed school lunches. Just don't take it for stupid stuff, you know? I would like to hear an intellectual, not highbrow, I'm not talking about William F. Buckley, but non-crap throwing, why you're better than the other guys. I don't want to hear name calling. That's the quickest way to turn me off. I don't want to hear, it just feels like they're marketing to the stupid.
Well, if they're marketing to their base, whoever it is, whether it's, you know, making up rumors about J.D. Vance in a couch or, you know, the things that are being said, the country will literally end if Kamala Harris becomes president. You're not bringing anyone new in with that. You're just pandering to your base. And I'm sure it's a great feeling. It's like, oh, look at this. Everyone agrees with us. Everyone knows what's going on. And everyone knows the way we feel. But for the people who are actually looking for answers, like you're describing yourself, Dave, it's you're just wasting everyone's time when you go in with these personal attacks. So I just have to laugh at it at this point because it's like, oh, okay, well, there you go, like playing the hits again. I just don't think that that's doing anything for you.
Do you think they are underestimating the intelligence of the electorate, or do you think that they know exactly who it is? And if they did try to go a little more highbrow, they'd just lose them.
I think they know exactly what works. What works better than stoking people's emotions? What works better than getting you mad? And we have evidence of it. I mean, this is not me guessing. It works.
Yeah.
Rage works. It gets engagement.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we talk about this on it's a thing on social media, right? Engagement farming. One of the things that gets you the most engagement and therefore, by the way, makes you money is rage. Even if it's wrong, look at this case with the boxer, Iman Khalif in the Olympics. Nobody follows the sport. Nobody cares about the sport. But everybody went all over that story and ran with bad information because they don't care that it's wrong. It just gets engagement. People will interact with it. They'll retweet it. They'll like it. They'll comment on it. They'll reply to it. And even if it's somebody saying, dude, you're wrong, that engagement helps make money. We are incentivized as a society to be angry. And in that particular case, we're going to enrage people that are on the right because that issue pisses them off. And you're getting the same kind of engagement farming for the more extreme side on the left, which that ends up manifesting itself in the pro-Hamas nonsense, right? We are that easy. There's a reason why historically the things that get us emotional get placement up front, right? Why do you think the Inquirer is right there at the checkout aisle? It's not in a place where you'd have to think and go find it because nobody's going to go do that. But you're going to see it. Ooh, Princess Diana had an alien baby. I'm buying that. We're very easy. And I think you're the exception, Dave. You wanting that conversation is the exception. I think there are a lot of people like that, but there's too many that are not. And I don't care what political alignment. And you said you're gettable. That's why I'm not gettable. I'm not gettable for either of these parties because this is how it is. It's all about eliciting the emotional response to something that's going to make you angry and not about the debate, the argument. Like, you know, when you're talking about the free breakfast and lunch. If the argument against that is how do we pay for it? What else comes off the budget? That's a good conversation. But the conversation, well, nobody should get a free lunch. That's not an argument. That's just anger. And unfortunately, that's what it is. It's all anger-based engagement.
When's the last time you were gettable, and who are you gettable by? When's the last time someone appealed to you that you recall?
I don't know. I don't know that anybody really ever has. My philosophy, if you call it that, for a lot of years was I'm just going to pick the person I think is smarter because I'm not an ideologue. I'm not really big for team sports in that regard. So I would say when things go bad, I would trust a smarter person who will surround themselves with smart people. I don't even know if that's a good test anymore. You think it is?
I think it's as valid as anything else.
And by the way, smart is relative too. We've had this conversation. Yeah. There's more, like there's book smart, there's street smart, there's common sense smart, and they're very different. They're not all the exact same thing. And maybe that's what's changed to me is I'm not as easy to convince that you're smart. I think a lot of these people are intelligent. They can take information in, learn it, remember it, and apply it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're thinking of others when they're thinking of making policy. And that's why I think as I get older, I get harder to get for someone to get me, because I used to think of it as smarter is better, but I don't know that I can make it that simple anymore, because smart is not always the same thing.
One thing that equalizes both sides is that they're both saying that if they don't win, it's the end of democracy.
Yeah.
If Donald Trump gets back in, it's the end of everything. Just fold up the tent. Monkey's dead. If Trump doesn't get in, it's the end of everything, because Kamala Harris is going to run it into the ground. Fold up the tent. The monkey's dead. One, do you think they truly believe that? And two, do you think that it is wrong of them to say? Do you think that that is a bridge too far in our country to be accusing your opponent of ending the republic?
I think it's a bridge too far, and I think it's why Donald Trump was shot at a couple weeks ago. I mean, I don't claim to know this kid and what was in his mind, but if you are someone who's going to do something like that and you believe this is the end of the United States and the end of democracy if this person takes office again, that's the kind of rhetoric that leads to what happened in Pennsylvania.
Can you imagine, like, the older I get, the more I feel my mortality. You know, when I was 22, I'm never going to die. And turning 60 in a month, like, you're just like expecting it any day kind of thing. And I just saw a story up on the television that they've arrested a Pakistani with ties to Iran who had a specific plan to shoot Donald Trump. Can you imagine being a person who there are literally probably realistically dozens of people with a real plan to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Not just fantasies,
not just talking, yeah, you know, Stinky Magoo at the corner bar, but real plans, putting pen to paper, yeah, to end your life. What a strange existence.
Yeah. And I do think that there are people that believe those extremes. I don't think that a lot of the biggest voices and names that you hear saying those things believe it. I don't believe senators actually believe that. I don't think that governors actually believe that. I don't think most of the people you see on television actually, yeah, believe that. I do think they convince other people to, mm-hmm, believe that, which
is what I think is wrong.
Yes, yeah. And that in and of itself makes it wrong. I mean, just small example, and I'm sorry it's going to sound like I'm picking on Fox News, but we saw all of their texts from the whole Trump scandal, right? It was the lawsuit. Which lawsuit was it?
Dominion
lawsuit. You saw the text of all of them saying, we know he's terrible, he's bad for the country, but then they go on TV and they say the opposite. It's that example, right? That's not the only one. Rachel Maddow's doing the same kind of stuff too. And I think that in and of itself is the example, though, of what's going on. Saying one thing and not fully believing it, but saying it with your whole chest, like the country's going to end if people disagree with you, is a problem.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 224. Time for Rachel's segment, the segment. I ever tell you, you almost got the worst nickname ever?
What would that be?
Boy, it's bad. I'm embarrassed to even say it. When you first started on the show, I was like, okay, Rachel, Ray, Zimmerman, Razor. Razor.
Razor.
No. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad we didn't do
like
that.
Like Blazer and Taser.
Nah, this is good. I like Razor.
You like
Razor,
it?
Razor's
good. Is it going to stick?
Yeah, I think it should stick.
What you got?
I don't like it.
It's Razor's segment.
Everyone knows if you don't like your nickname, they can't call you that. So.
That's true. It's a rule.
Yeah.
Especially on radio.
That's exactly how that works.
That's been stumping bullies for years.
I didn't know you would reject it.
All right. I want to talk about OnlyFans because I think that OnlyFans is probably one of the worst things happening to our society right now. First of all, I think it's an unrealistic presentation to young women. As far as, hey, if you get into pornography, this is how it's going to go for you. You're going to make millions of dollars. You're never going to have to work again. It's totally private. No one can see it unless they're paying for you. Yada, yada, yada. It's all a lie. There are so many creators who have signed up for OnlyFans who make nothing, and now they have naked pictures on the internet, and their weird cousin can go look at their pictures.
Yikes.
Like, well, I mean, I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
people think that, oh, it's totally safe. I'm totally in control. No, you're not. You're not in control of the situation the way OnlyFans lead you to believe you're in control. And that's my biggest problem with OnlyFans is they're painting themselves as this picture that they really aren't.
Any idea, not that you should know this, but any idea what percentage of people are making money and what percentage are not?
I don't know the percentages. I don't. I should look into that and talk about it.
You only hear the
on
success
a,
stories.
Right. You only hear about people who are like, I quit. Or, you know, that teacher who was doing it and then made $1 million once everyone found out that she had an OnlyFans account. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not the typical experience. I think OnlyFans, I looked it up the other day, apparently 82 million American men are subscribed to at least only one OnlyFans account. I'm assuming not all of these men are single, right? So it's putting stress on relationships in a way that I hate to call it quote unquote normal pornography, but OnlyFans is like you're kind of cultivating a relationship with this creator. I think it's a bigger betrayal to a relationship than run-of-the-mill porn. Mm-hmm. It's just a bad situation all around. Now I'm reading this article earlier today that talks about the fact that these OnlyFans models, the successful ones who have enough people who want to chat with them all day long, are now farming out that task to AI chatbots.
Saw that.
So there are men out there who are paying money to talk to a model that they probably, at this point, have feelings for.
Yeah.
Are bewitched by, I mean, they're paying
intimate
money to see
conversations.
Them, and they're actually talking to an AI chatbot. What are we doing here, folks? Like, what is the end game here? What's the whole thing just blows my mind. The way it's presented as if it's like this get rich quick scheme that anyone who does it is going to be a success. Yeah. That's absolutely not true.
Even I felt stupid for not doing it. I mean, for real, like you hear these stories, like the girl that you watch her sleep at night and she makes 12 grand a night. I'm like, well, I sleep every night.
Yeah. I looked this up while you were mentioning this, Rach. So what do you guys think the average OnlyFans creator makes per month? Average.
I'm going to guess $1,000.
Kevin messaged all the girls he subscribes to. Like,
oh, my gosh.
Andrew.
No, it was a joke. He laughed. He thought it was funny.
Razor didn't like it.
I know. I'm sorry, Razor.
I'm on my high horse right now.
Razor. I didn't mean to make that joke.
The average OnlyFans creator makes between $150 and $180 a month.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So 1%.
Puts in perspective.
1%. Yeah. Of the creators there make 33% of the total revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the, like, you always see, when you see people bragging about what they make, they're always like, I'm in the top 0.5% or whatever. And I have also wondered, like, well, what about the 70th percentile?
Yeah,
they're making $50 a month.
That's just what Bob, it's just presented as this, like, this is so good for you.
Yeah.
And it's just not. I'm sorry, it's not.
You sit in traffic now. But later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and Cam Wex. Time to talk to our pal Rick Horton. How you doing, Ricky?
I'm great, Dave. How about you?
Let's start out with a Ricky question for you. So I saw a really interesting stat. So I was a sprinter in college, so I love watching the 100 and the 200 in the Olympics. And Carl Lewis, what the time that he ran when he won the gold was the last place time for this year's men's final. Isn't that amazing? Carl Lewis and the guy who got last ran the same time that he won for the gold. What would the corollary be for that for major league pitching in your estimation, Rick?
Well, that's a great question. I think, you know, the fastest guys, I guess the corollary would be the fastest guys velocity-wise in my era would have been the 95-96. And you go to every bullpen in baseball, and that's kind of where it starts.
Yeah.
At 95-96. Now, you know, there is some question about whether or not you're measuring it exactly the same way because there are two different guns that were used. And, you know, I don't know if Carl Lewis had the same issue as guys sprinting today. But, you know, I would say that's a fair correlation because guys are, you know, the Olympic motto, bigger, stronger, faster.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Rick, if you go back. I mean, I was in high school in the late 80s, college, early 90s. If you were a high school pitcher touching 90, you were a first-round pick.
you are a big deal.
I mean, Steve Avery was the number one pick in the draft. I think the first high school pitcher ever to go number one. And he was touching 90. He wasn't sitting at 90. He was touching 90 as a high school player. Granted, he was a two-way player that could also hit, so there was more to it. But that's how much it's changed. Now, if you're going to be a top five pick as a pitcher now, you are 95 to 100 easy.
So let me follow up on that. Would you say that it is more that the guys today are more specimens, or is it more science or a mixture of both?
It's a few things. It is that. They're more 100% effort guys. That's another thing. I mean, they're throwing as hard as they can. We were taught not to do that. You should be pitching at maybe 92% of how hard you can throw
right.
and try to stay there and try to stay there as long as you can. It was more of a endurance thing than it was a sprint. It's kind of like people running the 800 now. I mean, that used to be kind of you run for a while, then you sprint. Mm-hmm. Now you just take off and fly and leave people in the dirt. That's another race that's changed in the Olympics on the running side. But pitching, kind of the same equivalent of that maybe, is you were kind of taught to kind of hold back a little bit. Now, the other thing is, and I think science will say this, and you got to trust the science, of course, it's about 4 miles an hour difference between what somebody threw in Steve Avery's time and somebody's throwing now in terms of the guns and the accuracy of it, because you're talking about taking the velocity out of the hand or when it reaches home plate. That's the difference. Well, obviously it slows down. There's some physics in that. But the point is, it's still, guys are still throwing harder regardless.
So as my dad would say, we're down to the short hairs of the season. Wheels, can you give your little diatribe that you gave earlier for Rick?
Well, the big one, Rick, is that these next 24 games are really critical. I mean, you're facing, you've got three games against a team that is behind you in the standings. That's the Reds. Everyone else is better than you on record-wise. Most of them are playoff teams. You know, obviously, Tampa's good. Even after their sell-off, they're 9-6 since the All-Star break. They're three games over 500. But then we know it's Milwaukee, it's the Yankees, it's the Dodgers. You know, there's nothing but good teams outside of the Reds. And the Reds are still decent, but they're behind you in the standings. And this is where the critical – this probably decides it. Like, whether you're not, you've got a chance. If you can hang tight – then September can matter. If you have a great 24 games, then you might be in position. But a lot of things come down to this run, and I'm very worried about the starting rotation giving up more runs over the last 6 weeks, and I'm worried about their inability to hit lefties. It's been a real issue.
Yeah, and just kind of hitting in general, the hitting and running with runners in scoring position hasn't been good. But, you know, that's what you just said, my favorite diatribe of the day, although I haven't heard many. But that I'm all over what you just said. Agree with it 100%. And my feeling is you don't have to win every game. I think we have to back off of that. But I think you better win every series going forward. And you're talking about winning a series against Milwaukee, winning a series against the Dodgers. This is not going to be a simple task. I think it's the second hardest schedule in baseball in the month of August of all teams. And, you know, you could say bad timing for that. But, you know, everybody gets the same kind of shot at it. And, you know, one way to kind of find out who you are is to play the best, though. I mean, that's, and I'm not saying they can't do it, but it's definitely going to be a challenge. Next 4 weeks is going to decide kind of what's going on in October as far as the Cardinals are concerned. I'm going back and forth between caring more about the division or the wild card.
Yeah.
Now the wild card seems less of a possibility than the division does. So I'm kind of torn between who I want to win when those teams play each other.
And to be fair to everybody that was listening earlier, I went a little further than that in the diatribe, Rick, because I feel like more adjustments need to happen when we're looking at a roster that is not suited to handling left-handed pitching. And I know that's only one thing, but your entire bench is essentially left-handed minus the backup catcher. There are right-handed hitters at AAA that might be able to help. And I feel the allegiance to the idea of defense is great in general, but right now is not what this team needs. They need to score more runs.
Well, I think that's the whole point about getting Tommy Pham is to help with that. And then I think, you know, Goldschmidt had, six multi-hit games out of 10 games like 2 weeks ago, and then he's gotten cold again.
Yeah.
So we're kind of bummed about that. But if he gets back to that guy again, which, you know, we hope he can, then now that helps that issue. Oddly, the Cardinals have a winning record against left-handed starters, but that's not your point. Your point is, if it's a left-handed pitcher overall, because you're going to see guys out of the pen too, the numbers are lower. I mean, they're not lower. They're some of the lowest in baseball in terms of offense of production, average, OPS, all of that.
Yeah.
So, and some of the guys that should be hitting lefties better are not. Even the lefty batters, Burleson, Donovan, I think are better than they've shown against lefties, but it is what it is, and you've got to figure out a way to get better.
So, stupid question. Back when I was playing like Corey League, you were terrified of a left-hander because they were so rare.
Yeah, you don't see them very much. Yeah.
Why are our guys having such trouble with lefties?
Well, you know, lefties are it's an interesting question. I mean, lefties are different. I mean, you'd say, you know, you're going to see maybe one or two lefties in every bullpen and maybe one lefty in a rotation, and it just takes a while to pick up, you know, where the ball's coming out of their hand, and it's coming in at a different angle, all of that. And I think it's, you know, so much of hitting is visual. And if you go from lefty to righty, it's not that lefties are throwing harder or necessarily nastier with their slider. It's just coming from a different arm angle that they're not used to. And they have to make an adjustment with that. My high school league, the best five pitchers in our league all played college baseball, and all of us were left-handed.
Wow.
I couldn't hit any of us, including myself, if I had the opportunity. So I know what it's like to have to try to look at a ball coming from behind you if you're a lefty. I mean, it almost seems like it's coming from behind you, and I just think it's not as familiar on a daily basis. And, you know, maybe the more they keep throwing lefties at us, we'll get better at it.
Yeah, and I'll throw into something that Ollie said about this. I think it was last week, Rick. It might have been a little bit further back, but I think it was last week. They're also, the Cardinals have a lineup that is based heavily on having left-handed hitters.
I mean, no doubt.
You know, you got Nootbaar, Donovan, Gorman, Burleson. Like, a lot of the guys you're counting on are lefties, and your two big righties aren't what they need to be. You know, and I hate to blame everything on two guys, but your stars are supposed to be your stars. And if they were normal, I don't think we're even having this conversation.
So the way the roster was constructed, just to defend that, which I think we all would agree that is it's defensible, is the original model of this Cardinal team had Jordan Walker in it,
yes.
Had Tommy Edman in it, who's a better right-handed batter, who Dylan Carlson is a better right-handed batter, who got hurt and had a bad year, and then Jordan Walker, we know about him, and then Goldie. So it presupposed that Contreras wasn't going to miss 40 days or whatever he missed with a broken arm. So all the right-handers kind of got hurt or underperformed.
Yep.
All the lefties have gotten better, including guys like Michael Ciani. So it is an odd kind of year as far as that's concerned. It wasn't construction. It's just kind of how it's played out.
Yeah, and I think the construction, the point is that is 100%. Like, you can't plan for the unknowable.
No.
I think
your point is you have to reconstruct it sometimes. I mean,
and again,
that's the Tommy Pham edition at this point, And that maybe that's not far enough, and maybe there is a Jordan Walker or JC suggestion in AAA, which, you know, you don't want to kind of rush if it's not the right thing. It's not the right thing, and you have Luke and Baker, but you know I think we know what that is, and Fermin probably the best hitter down there, and we've seen him, and he didn't kind of pan out as well at the big league level. So you know there's options, but you know I don't know that anybody's kind of racing to the. Racing to the phone over them either, but it might happen.
They're maybes.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Right? There's no yeses waiting there. That's the nature of being at AAA.
That's right. Exactly.
All right, buddy. Have a great call. We'll talk to you soon.
Great to chat with you guys, as always.
You want to hear the dumb thing that's dividing the internet today?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The lady was out for her birthday dinner with her friends at a Mexican restaurant. And one of her friends ordered sizzling fajitas.
Oh, I know what the problem's going to be.
What?
The fajitas take attention away from
That's
the birthday
right.
girl.
It upstaged the birthday girl, and she ranted and raved about it. And it's her night, not her night. And how dare you order sizzling fajitas and take all the focus off of me?
That's really good.
That really happened?
That's really good.
Really happened.
Was it an 8-year-old's party?
No, grown woman.
Therapy. I'm not even kidding. Like, that's not okay.
I bet if I ordered sizzling
There's something
fajitas,
wrong
Kevin
with you if you're a grown-ass
mad.
Person and you feel like you're being upstaged by fajitas.
Okay, but when they bring the fajitas out, heads turn.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a moment.
It's like when they sing Happy Birthday. It's very similar. Like, everybody stops and goes,
okay.
What's that noise?
So? I didn't realize we lived in a world where on your birthday, you are the center of attention for the entire universe all around you.
I think you know good and well that that's the way.
I'm saying that if that's how you are, there's something wrong with you. You should be okay with somebody ordering fajitas.
Is it that much different than like wearing white to a wedding, though?
Yes.
Don't draw all the attention to you on the birthday.
Totally different things.
I'm with Andrew. I think if I were going out with you guys and it was your birthday, I would maybe forego the fajitas.
I'd say you should order what you want, Rach. I'll be fine because I'm a grown person.
He says that now.
Yeah, I'm setting you up.
It's going to sting pretty hard on your birthday.
Wouldn't it be great if we did that? We're out for lunch.
We all order fajitas.
And I lose it fajitas. And I stomp out like, can't believe you guys.
My day.
What about just being upstaged in general?
Depends on the circumstance, right?
What's the worst way to upstage? Is it proposing at a wedding? Is that the worst thing you can do?
That's a bad one,
that's
I agree.
That's really bad. That's like the worst thing. Yeah, that might be the worst thing you can do.
Does that happen?
I don't know. But
it's
a
cliche.
Yeah, don't do that.
I've never seen it happen myself, but it's a whole thing like, you better not propose at the wedding because that takes all the attention.
The other cliche being like, let's say you are dating an athlete and they've just run like a big, giant, you know, race or something and they won or they win at the Olympics or whatever and then you propose to them like there.
Oh, did you see the one totally where the dad ran out, the mom had just was finishing a marathon?
Yeah.
And he ran out with the kids, you know, to be like, oh, let's go congratulate mommy. And did they trip her or something?
Oh,
or?
No.
She wasn't done running yet.
Yeah, they ran out before the race was over. So she was in the lead. So she just like checked him out of the way to get to the finish line. And then came back and was like, hooray, but they ran out before the end of the race.
Yeah.
So she hadn't finished the race
yet.
That
was about
the
husband. That wasn't about the wife.
That wasn't the kid or the wife. That was the husband going, let's run out, but not noticing that it was before the finish line.
That's something I might have done. And that's for real. That's why I can say it was the husband because I like this. I like the sweet smell of credit.
Yeah,
like this is going to be so great. She's going to love this. And
Well, and the big controversy was that he seemed very upset that she just blew right past him and was like, "Get out of the way."
I wouldn't have been that dumb.
Yeah, and everyone's like, "The race wasn't over. Like she hadn't won the race yet."
Now, Dave, picture this. It's your birthday. We've gone to a Mexican restaurant.
And I order
fajitas. The fajitas come out, they're sizzling, and all eyes turn to the plate.
Yeah, I get it, but that one wouldn't bother me.
Yeah.
I get upstage. I get that idea. Like if you're going out, first of all, whose birthday means that much to them? You're just born that day. You didn't do anything. You didn't achieve anything. You were just born.
Yeah. Ooh, there he goes.
It's your mom's achievement, not yours.
now he's going.
Am I wrong?
You know what? Send a round of fajitas over to the mom. Celebration of this birthday.
I don't feel like my birthday is like my special day.
I used to. I used to make a big deal out of it the same way I made a big deal out of not putting the windows in my Jeep and wearing sandals until Thanksgiving. Always thinking something weird would make me cool and make people like me. They just thought I was dumb.
I have fun on my birthday. I have it a good day, but like I don't feel like it's my special day.
The people I can't take are the birth month people. Like, it's my birth month. Watch out. Like, oh, come on. That's a lot.
Birthdays, am I right?
Yeah,
birthdays.
Grown people. Like, I would say, like, if you're, like, having a big birthday party, let's say it's a milestone, too. Like, you're 40 or you're 50 or you're whatever. And somebody else comes in the middle of the party and they're like, I got a job promotion today. Oh, yeah, that's probably a bit.
Yeah, now we ferreted him out.
I can understand. No, I couldn't care less if you do it to me. Uh-huh. I can understand that's an upstaging thing.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense. It's like, oh, come on, man. Could you wait till, I don't know, tomorrow?
Oh, he's mad.
Yeah.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.